You're listening to Giles Brown on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. After a massive stroke, Ted Baxter had extreme aphasia and badly impaired mobility. Willing himself to recover, he learned seven vital strategies that can improve anyone's odds of not just surviving, but thriving. It's a fascinating story. It's in a new book called Seven Keys to Recovering from a Massive Stroke by a Survivor. Delighted to join me live on the line from the west coast of the USA, Ted Baxter. Ted, good afternoon to you, or good morning to you even.
How are you? How are you? Thank you for having me on your show.
The pleasure is all mine. It's a subject that has come recently more to the light. We've had the tragic deaths recently of Luke Perry and John Singleton after the effects of strokes, only at the age of 51, each of them. Strokes were perhaps seen as an elder disease, if you like, or something that happened to an older person, but they're becoming more and more in the public eye. Explain to us yourself about your situation before you had your stroke.
Yeah, before I was a global management director for Citadel Investment Management. It was a huge job, pretty awesome. The only thing I can explain this is like a dream job. So I had this stroke one day. It was 14 years ago. I mean, you know, April 21st, 2005. It was truly terrifying. So I was only 41 years old, so young. I finished my business trip that day in London. I took a flight back to Chicago. That night, I was watching television with my wife and commercials, whatever. And she asked me a question. I couldn't respond. And she asked me the same question. I couldn't respond. So anyway, I stared at the space. I had starting to sweat and all that kind of stuff. And my wife, she knew something was terribly wrong. So she called the police and the paramedics. I could hear the words and sentences, but I couldn't formulate. So the paramedics was there at the moment. I lost the power of language. I lost the power of comprehension, speech, etc. And I lost my ability to use my right side of my body. So I couldn't walk. So that's the kind of stuff I went through.
I mean, prior to this, had there been any sort of a health scare? You said you had a high-flying job. You were traveling around across the globe. I mean, had you managed to stay relatively healthy? I mean, was your lifestyle...
No, nothing in my family signified that I could get a stroke like I had. I had no warning signs. I never had any mild strokes, such as like TIA or something like that. My health was great. I exercised almost every day, had low cholesterol, didn't smoke, only drank modestly. As one doctor said to me, I took really good care of myself, and he said, you're healthy as a horse. So my situation was due to things like stress and pressure that related to my job, which you couldn't predict.
So what was the immediate effect? Then you were rushed to hospital, you'd lost all movement down your right side. What was the original prognosis, and how did you cope with the immediate aftermath of the stroke?
Yeah, well, my condition was something like weakness in my body, a right side paralyzed, right side weakness. So I couldn't see, my eyesight, problems with balance and coordination, and pain that wouldn't go away in my head. That was all the physical stuff. On speech problems, I mean, that was a totally different. An animal, if you will. I had difficulty understanding speech, couldn't read, couldn't write, short-term memory problems, which was I could hold an idea in my head probably 15 seconds and before they go away. So that was my condition.
And what was you said you'd been sitting on the sofa with your wife when the attack happened, when you had the stroke happened. What was her reaction? What was the reaction of your family and also your friends and obviously also the people you were working with?
Yeah, I tell you, if I weren't with my ex-wife, at the point she was my wife, I wouldn't be here telling my story right now. She was the best of a caregiver. She was more than a caregiver, more than a wife. She was just, she did everything that was possibly done. She called the paramedics. She called the police officers. She talked to the nurses when we were there. She didn't know what happened to me, and nor didn't they. The doctors didn't really know what they did. But she was an awesome. I don't have enough kudos to give to her about the situation. So that was one. And the second was my family. You must have a support system. Hopefully nothing like this will happen to anybody who's listening to this this radio right now. But I hope if you do go through this, you must have a support system. Like if it means your family, your wife or loved ones, and good doctors and medicals, people like that.
It must be incredibly frustrating then if you're trying to get your body to do things and it just won't move and the speed, because I suppose it's something that we, those of us who haven't suffered and gone through what you have gone through, we take for granted. I'm talking to you now, I can get up and walk out of this room and get myself a cup of coffee, and I know I'll be understood. But of course, when something as drastic and as shattering as this happens, all that goes out of the window.
That's right. That's right. And I'm telling you, you're very glad that you're here today. I'm very glad of it. And just to tell my role is now to be an advocate for aphasia and advocate for strokes, and just to tell people this is what you need to know about this terrible disease, basically. So that's what I'm doing right now.
So what exactly then is aphasia then? What is is that a type of a stroke? I mean, please, in layman's terms.
Yeah, in aphasia, what that means is it's an impediment of language. It affects the production or comprehension of speech and ability to read or write. There are approximately 2.4 million people in the United States that have aphasia right now. It's a killer disease. When I first became a person with aphasia, mine was really bad. I couldn't write, couldn't read. I had to really work on intonation and clarity. The speech pathologist would say this is called global aphasia, which is the worst of the worst of the best. So for the first year after my stroke, I could only say about 1,000, maybe 1,500 words at the most. So just to compare this for you. So by age four, you have 4,000 or 5,000 words right there. Right. But I couldn't. I only have 1,000. So I wouldn't be talking to you right now if I didn't. I had a lot of practice the last 14 years ago.
I mean, they always say that you can perhaps discover something about yourself, but I mean, how deep did you have to dig to get back? And the training and the rehabilitation must have been a long and a painful process to go through.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's what I did. I didn't know what to do, because I used to be a CFO for investment management. So I know what to do, but at that point you get to you have to deal with that in what you have to do with your body. So I don't know. So the first thing I did was just a small steps. That's what I did. So the first thing I dealt with was to get myself up out of my bed and walk down the hall. I did that for the first 4 or 5 or 6 weeks after I had the stroke, and then after all that was. You know, I knew what to do as far as physical stuff. Then I'll go to the speech stuff, and I started with kindergarten flashcards. Flashcards, visual books, just to, because I couldn't say the words. I could tell you what looks like an apple, but I couldn't tell you that it says apple. I couldn't use the word. So every week it got a little better, but it was a very, very long trip.
I mean, you said that you had been the chief financial officer for a global company. Were there times that the frustration must have been immense at times, and there must have been times that you thought, well, I just can't do this.
I mean, what you have to do is just to say, look, I'm forgetting what my job, I'm forgetting of that, and I'm just glad I'm still alive, and so that's what I use that as hope, and a positive mindset. Those, unless I had those two things. It wouldn't be a successful journey if I had. So that's what had happened.
So, I mean, like I said at the beginning of the interview, you know, the past couple of months we've lost, if you like, two high-profile figures, John Singleton and Luke Perry, as the result of strokes at the age of 51, both of them, which is, again, not as young as you were when you experienced your stroke. I mean, do you think our perception of a stroke and aphasia is changing? And if not, what do we need to do to get this condition more in the public eye?
Yeah. Yes, I do to an extent. Right. We have some things that we can do. Because being a person with aphasia in the real world right now, you know. Well, not in the real world for me, but for what I can see, 9 to 5, sometimes there aren't enough time for people to just stop, think, and take a break from a busy day, just to say, you know, like just to say hi, how are you? How are you to the stroke supervisors or people with aphasia? So I think we should do something. I think one of the ways to appease us and being part of the solution is more communication and educate people about what the concepts of a stroke or aphasia are, you know, what that means to the survivors and caregivers and how to continue to survive.
I suppose that one of the problems, though, is when you come across somebody that you've known before, for example, so maybe some of your colleagues had this or some of your friends had this, who have known you as a vibrant, active person, and then you've been struck down with this condition. It can be a shock to them, and a lot of people don't know how to approach somebody with any sort of serious condition, but especially with aphasia.
Yeah, that's right. Because that happened. I had the situation with my family, you know, where I happen to have five siblings, and you know, one knew exactly what I was going through. I mean, he was there in front, and in my face, and he knew that I couldn't talk. But he was just telling me, giving me encouraging, the slogans, if you will. But some of my other brothers, they didn't really know what I went through, so they didn't really know how to come by and just say, that, hi, how are you? Whatever, so, you know. It's just, it's a very tough line, fine line to go that through friends or even like family. So you'll work, but I'm just saying you go through that process.
What sort of things that can people take in? I mean, you've been through this, but what options can you take to decrease your chance of this happening to you if you know if you're active, and if you do get struck with this, I mean, how can you improve your odds, as it were, and come through it?
Yeah, I mean, for the first thing, everybody who had a stroke or aphasia, it's unique to that survivor. So they need to think about that. So I think that the survivor, the victim, should just think or reflect about what just happened to them, being grateful the fact that they're still living, and what they can do right now, or getting himself to be better mentally. And then you know, the themes of faith and always to be positive are key, absolutely key. Get out from the bed and walk down the corridor. I mentioned that to you. I build from strength from that. So the small steps become bigger achievements, you know, as you go through that rehab and recovery stages. You know, so but as I said, regarding my language, it's, you know, there's no way that you can bloop after you got through this. You know, you can take like side steps. You can't. You have to do the basic the blocks and tackles, the steps. So you must go through the flashcards. You must go through to get the personal speech therapist and get yourself a stroke, aphasia group setting, that kind of stuff. But I would say that there is one thing that a stroke neurologist coined the concept is called time is brain. So I really did a lot of things all at once, just as if I were working for a financial services job in my situation. For the reason that I put a time duration on all the exercises I performed, that I can let my brain to immerse all the knowledge. You know, it's just like your brain is like a sponge, sopping up all the information and knowledge it could in a time duration. That's key. Time is brain.
So why did you decide to put what you'd learned down in a book? I mean, obviously, it's for trying to, the book is called 7 Keys to Recovering from Massive Stroke. Presumably, you wanted to put this down to help anybody who'd been through what you've been through, but also to put this down in a book as well. It obviously helps with your rehabilitation, I would imagine.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, what I usually, I could tell you that this standard response is like, yeah, I want to write a book, and that's it's going to let me to just to help people, to give them more awareness and education of strokes and that kind of stuff. But this is also, it helps me. It helps me to speak better, just to think about, okay, well, I can do that. I can tell you with that in one sentence instead of doing three sentences. You know what I mean? So it's just like basic like a therapy that I got. So for me to sit down and write my book here, This was 5 years it took me to write the book. So I mean, we're talking about like a major, colossal job that I had gone.
But again, as you said before, even with going through the flashcards, it's a case of, you said you have to do the hard yards, the tacks and the blockles, yep, for American football parlance, if anybody was wondering what that was. And it, this, you know, that's one of the important bits. Another thing is also that the fact to realize perhaps that you are not the only person in the world, though it can seem that you are, if you are trapped, you know, as a victim of aphasia. But you've put together the importance of talking to others and who have experienced that and are going through the same thing. Support networks again.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what I do. Every Monday now, I'm in a group. It's called the Communication Recovery Group. It's hosted by a hospital here in Orange County, California, and I act as if I were a speech language pathologist. So, you know, there are 50 or 60 people come into Communication Recovery Group every Monday. It's you wouldn't believe it. It's I help people that need it the most. You know, and I tell them what to do. You know, what they're going to do if they have it. If they have a second stroke, this is what you're going to get. You need to be careful. You know. So I'm giving them a lot of tips. Plus, and also, I also work with two experienced speech language pathologists, and I tell them this is my tips for you. What you should do. You know, what I went through when I go through my journey of having better support.
You just described it as a journey, and if you think back to where you were when you were 41, as you said, the chief financial officer of a global company, yeah, you know, well paid, high flying, and then this strikes you, and you have to learn more about yourself. You have to learn to rely on yourself, and perhaps as well, which may be because I don't know your life before, Ted, but perhaps you were an independent kind of guy, and you know you don't get ways to where you are without being thinking, I can do, you know, master of the universe, I can do this all on my own. But something like this makes you realize that, for better or worse, we are all in this together. I mean, without trying to sound like a Hollywood movie script, would you say that this is, you know, something that has made you appreciate, communication, relationships, and that kind of thing that you weren't aware of when you had the high-flying career?
Absolutely. I couldn't say what you just said as better than you did. I mean, that is absolutely why. I have a lot of gratification now for the people around there. You know, it's not where I go to the Starbucks every day and just get a coffee. You know, when I go there, I'm very aware of the people around, and if they have a disability position or a disability problem, I ask the caregiver, hey, how you doing? Is he going to be all right? You know, or you need any some help? You know, I always are asking those questions. And you know, I never thought about that when I was in my career of investment management. What I was doing through that, I mean, that's totally different life. But hey, my, you know, God said to me, look, I have different plans for you, Ted.
Absolutely. What do you hope that people take from your book, Seven Keys to Recovering from a Massive Stroke by a Survivor?
Yeah, I think if just to make sure that people be prepared and be fast if you recognize the signs of a stroke. So take a minute just to memorize the acronym, so you can act quickly. But it means that time saves brain, And fast action saves thousands of lives and prevents disability. So that's the kind of statistics that, you know, we can all believe on. So that's what I'm going to leave for.
If people want to, the book is called Seven Keys to Recovering from a Massive Stroke. If people want to find out more about you or about the book, are you on the social media? Is there a website, Ted?
Yep. You can go to go to my website, which is called www.tedwbaxter.com, or if you want a copy of my book, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or it's on a lot of independent distributors. But the best way to do it is to contact me using the www.tedwbaxter.com. I have a subscribe to my newsletter also.
And also, you can download the book as well. That we have a link with our Talk Radio Europe virtual bookshop. Ted, it's been a pleasure and a privilege to speak to you. Only begs the question. What are you doing today, Ted? What's your day in Orange County going to be like today?
Well, I'm because being now today is April 30th here in the United States. May 1st is the start of the May stroke month, which is May. So which means that we'll have a stroke awareness for the whole month. So that's what I'm doing. So I'm promoting my book, giving speeches. I did my volunteer yesterday, but I'm also trying to get myself to do more speaking so that I can do this like as a regular thing.
Well, Ted, you've been brilliant today. I mean, as I said before, it has been a pleasure and a privilege to speak to you. The book is called Seven Ways to Recovering from a Massive Stroke by a Survivor. It's by Ted Baxter. Ted, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks very much.